Mishnah. So we can hear something. I'd like to read a short blurb here about planning commission workshops, which we are conducting here at this moment. The purpose of planning commission workshops is to familiarize members with issues that come before them, provide an opportunity for exchanging ideas regarding the relevant topics, and to solicit agency or expert opinions to add to the body of the knowledge before the commission considers changes to the comprehensive plan, policy, or text of the Land Development Code. Workshops serve as a forum for training new members in procedural or administrative roles and for informing of changes to state statute or case law that affect land use decisions. They provide an opportunity to determine commission's schedules of upcoming hearings, meetings, or future workshops, and a chance to form subcommittees or focus groups on land use issues. Because workshops are intended to serve the entire membership of the Planning Commission, full attendance is anticipated, and when a quorum is present, meetings are subject to the Oregon Public Meeting Law. Notice is published on the county's website, on county meeting bulletin board, and sent to local news media. Planning Commission workshops are open for the public to attend, but are not an opportunity for public testimony. Okay. Now, just one other thing I wanted to add. When we are in the hearing process, we tend to sometimes want to expand upon our experiences with certain things. Because during the testimony part, we should refrain from that and use it during the discussion part when we bring it back out of the public hearing. Anyway, that's all I want to bring forth there. All right. Proposed text amendments to the RLDC, Wireless Communication Ordinance. And David, do you have anything for you?
Well, I'll just briefly introduce the topic, and then I know Ron Wright has some things he'd like to say. He was chair of the subcommittee. Sent you a draft dated April 9th, draft of the Wireless Communications Ordinance. We do have a few minor edits of that draft that are going to take place. One of the subcommittee members emailed me some things, and I just frankly missed it. And they belong in this draft, and I didn't get them in there, but they're fairly minor in language, and I'll make sure when you see the next one that those minor edits will be included. I want to recognize in the audience Steve Porter and there in the black hat, and Siobhan Feinberg. They were both on the wireless subcommittee, put in a lot of time and effort, and you know their efforts are throughout this document, and we really appreciated their help. So today's workshop is just to take a look at the draft. Familiarizing with it, so when we go to public hearing, the Planning Commission is well-versed in what this document really says, what its meaning is, and where it came from. Just briefly, the Telecommunications Act of 1996 required local jurisdictions to adopt regulations and look at wireless communications facilities. There's been some amendments to the TCA and other federal legislation that requires that we take a look at them, and James Black and I have had the experience of regulating cell towers and communications technology through the conditional use permit process and ministerial site plans for cell tower antenna replacements. This ordinance gives us the opportunity to have something much more focused on the technology, focused on some of the issues and concerns of neighborhood groups as well as us being regulators. And those being regulated gives them a sense of what they need to do to file proper applications. So with that, I'll hand it over to Ron.
All right. We pretty much have come down to the final draft, and we've let Siobhana Feinberg really taken the driver's seat and and the way NCAC instigated this and steered most of it, and we took their legwork and used what they had, since they were so kind enough to do that for us. And we got the cellular people, other people, WCAC, and we tried to draft an ordinance that was good for the county. So it's good for a whole. There's been back and forth on all sorts of different things. The hard one that we'll still go over in the hearing is going to be the setbacks. Everybody's got it. Every person you talk to has got a different idea of setbacks. We've come up with an agreement here in the proposal, and then there's both Shivana and myself were given the task of coming up with separate sets of setbacks so we have something to look at and evaluate and compare. It's up to the PC and move forward from there, from that point forward. But we're proposing in the staff draft ordinance at the moment. The amount of labor and effort that Shivana has done with dotting the T's and crossing the T's and dotting the I's has been a major deal, so I don't want to make sure we don't embellish that at all, because she's put the time in. She also had a statement, and she asked me to read it, so I'm going to do so. And this is drafted by Shivana. In the proposed statement to be read, the subcommittee formed by the Planning Commission to work on the ordinance regulating the siting of cellular PCS towers and antennas has been working diligently on this task for over a year. We have grappled with a large amount of information unearthed from hours of research on many relevant issues in order to create the most up-to-date and reasonable law for Josephine County. Citizens of very differing opinions have participated in the discussion and made informed compromises. We have been advised that once this committee has concluded its foray into a wealth of information and its lengthy deliberations, what we conclude is subject to your approval. It is regretful that you have not had the opportunity to hear all the background facts, research, and perspectives discussed during the committee's months of work and to consider all these issues as deeply and with the focus that we have. And that's what subcommittee's job is to do that. So, we sincerely hope that you who will be reviewing what we have crafted and are needed to approve our work will fully appreciate the many years of involvement in this arena represented on our committee and the length and depth of exclusive focus on this issue that the committee's work represents. We ask that you give our resulting draft the consideration it's due, understanding that the committee has appointed you. The committee you appointed has approached each and every aspect of these proposed regulations from all angles, and whatever thoughts you have may have about changes has probably already been considered and discussed at length by the committee. We ask that you recognize that the draft we present to you represents a depth of consideration behind each and every item. No clauses were made casually, and alternatives were carefully considered. We took the mission you gave us very seriously, and we dove into this topic with great sincerity and a great depth. We hope that you will keep this in uppermost in your minds before making any changes to our work without being privy to the volumes of research and months of discussion that went into our committee's outcome. We sincerely hope that if there are any changes that you feel strongly about, you'll do us the honor of allowing us to bring that background information and relevant to that issue that went into our diligent deliberations and conclusions proposed to you here today. We thank you for the opportunity to wholeheartedly and rigorously serve Josephine County in this way. And again, that was drafted by Shivana. Quick rehash. We also had two people from the Northwest Wireless Consortium. I'm not sure what they're...
I think it's just Northwest Wireless.
Northwest Wireless.
Yeah.
That their sole purpose in life is to deal with towers and wireless communications and all the parties in between back and forth. And they were... an excellent source of reference when it came down to ordinances and drafting and things that should be in there and things that shouldn't be in there. They caught some things that we needed to do and some things we shouldn't do. Same thing Shivana did. Steve Porter in the black hat behind there basically knows more about towers than anyone around. So he was invaluable in providing the expertise of the electronics of the matter. And understanding, sometimes a little animated, but we like Steve anyway. But you know, just trying to get everybody to understand that, you know, there's almost more energy coming off your microwave than there is your cell phone. So, you know, just where you go and how you get there.
Cell phone or cell phone tower? Did you mean tower?
No, tower.
Oh.
If I can add to that, the draft ordinance has also been reviewed by county legal staff. And there were a few times that we raised an issue and wanted to go in a particular direction, and Steve Rich advised us otherwise. So the ordinance as you see it, with that in mind, county legal staff has understood this was a draft in process, and so when the final document goes before a public hearing, they'll take another look at it. But they have been involved throughout in recognizing changes to the ordinance, how they might affect property rights, how they might affect easements and other legal matters that come up in the construction of this, including changes to the PCA.
Yeah, and in the packet you'll also, when it comes before the PC, you should also have the note in there from the county appraiser about property values. You'll have some stuff in there from Ms. Feinberg about property values. So make sure you weigh those. Because I can go out the street and talk to one person and talk to the other person, I'll get two varying opinions. So it's going to be one of those things that we all get to come to an agreement on and just figure out what's going to work best for the county, and that's the bottom line. What is the county going to achieve without creating headaches and heartache and making sure people can still use their phones?
I want to mention Charles Chase from the State Fire Marshal's Office was also involved in the subcommittee. Made some comments about life safety and
Article 76 effects on his end of things.
That sort of thing.
Which Brian would have stayed, but he wasn't there very long.
Anyway, I can walk you through just the general chapters of the ordinance if you want, and then if you've had a chance to read it, if you have any particular questions, we'll try to answer those today.
Can I make a comment before we start, please?
Sure.
I did have an opportunity to sit in a couple of the workshops you did have, and I can tell you argued all sides of the story. It was a learning process for myself. I never knew how much radiation that one of these microwave towers might put out. And it was a great experience to learn that it's very low energy. My only real concern was about if this is next to me, what's it like to my property. But, you know, it's like you said, it's a mixed bag.
Yeah, everybody's different. And we got the second to last meeting or last meeting, and then we got the House bills that were passed. What was the road package or President Obama's stimulus plan now changed cell stuff. So then we had to sit down and go over what
changed what?
And changed the cellular RF stuff. So we had to make changes because of Obama's stimulus plan.
Yeah, the change the frequency, you're saying, the radio frequency?
Well, no, but that's common.
There's a middle class tax relief
and Job Creation Act of 2011.
Which obviously had a lot of riders and clauses put on it by different interests around
the country.
And a couple of those provisions dealt with cell phones.
And what did they do? What effect did they have?
The effect of the, talk about the effect of that.
Basically, it talks about, it was based on co-location. That is this saying that local jurisdictions must approve co-locations if the existing tower has no physical changes. In a nutshell, that's basically what it meant. So we had to dive back in our ordinance and make sure our ordinance fit that criteria.
Or did it
challenge it?
It was pretty close.
It is pretty close. I think we did okay.
We did too. Yeah.
But that was a constant background noise, if you will, in developing and crafting an ordinance in an industry that's changing as fast as telecommunications. Uh-huh. And I think we'll bring it to the public hearing with the caveat that more changes may be on their way because it's a rapidly evolving technology and industry, and we may need to come back to our ordinance periodically and update because of that. There's an update clause built in the ordinance.
And hopefully.
When I was reading this, actually, the one question that I had actually was about co-location, because when you have more and more cell towers in the same place, doesn't that increase, actually increase the radio frequencies or whatever the microwaves or whatever it is that that could potentially be dangerous? I mean, does it? I mean, is collocation necessarily always a good thing?
It's a preferred thing. Yeah. It is the preferred method. Co-location is preferred because you don't have a bunch of towers with a few antennas on it all over the place or clustered somewhere.
I can see that certainly visually that's good, but but couldn't co-locating them, doesn't that actually increase the potential negative effects over having them individually? Lower emissions.
Yeah, that was what I was looking for. Thank you, Steve. Steve, you're our resident expert on that, so I'm going to call on you to...
She is correct. It would indeed concentrate. If you add more antennas, you get more energy. So yes, they would be more concentrated in a co-located environment.
Is there some limit or threshold that we want to say we want to co-locate up to this threshold, but beyond this threshold, that's not a good idea anymore?
There's a level recommended by the federal government, which even heavily loaded co-locates are well under that, in some cases 5%. I thought paper would support that.
Okay.
Not tonight, but it was brought to the...
I think that would actually be a good question to pose, even if we know the answer, to pose that question during a public hearing, because it's probably a public hearing kind of question that
would be interested in. Along those lines, would it also be true? Because I have done a little research on this, and it looks to me like sometimes they have a focus. Maybe one of them's going off that way, one's going that way, then it wouldn't affect the power on either one if they weren't going to the same direction.
Yeah. Well, and that's correct, because the antennas are put up in sector arrays, but the sector is directional.
Right.
It's not a 360
degree. And they don't overlap?
Well, and you can have some overlap, but if you have too much overlap, you have confliction.
Right, and they wouldn't want to do that because that
correct.
Would be bad for their
and
their
reception. Let me give you a little more quick. Because we made the... Sure. There is new bandwidth coming. And we've made the ordinance to basically ignore any bandwidth changes so it doesn't affect the ordinance. So the 700 megahertz frequency, all the analog cell towers, that's where it's at now. Okay, they've taken the UHF channels, they've turned that over to bandwidth for phones and data and that kind of stuff. So the ordinance isn't going to make any effect as to what bandwidth it is. The lower the bandwidth, the better we prefer, but it's all government controlled. And some quick highlights for you. The cell carrier is licensed for a bandwidth. It could be licensed for 2, 3, or 4 bandwidths. We can't tell them which bandwidth they have to use because their area is going to be licensed and they're going to be licensed for a specific. So just so you guys have an understanding of that is all. So they'll come in here and they'll put whatever bandwidth with the co-locate. You know, if we can put co-locate specifically with different bandwidths, it doesn't really have any effect with each other. But if you're co-locating and everybody's on the same bandwidth, then you have a big potential to have a confliction and the bandwidth cross-talking to each other, basically, just for a simpleton term for you.
But they would certainly try to avoid that because that's definitely
It's no advantage to any of them because they don't gain anything by doing that.
And they lose something.
Yeah, so again, the antennas are all directional. By co-location, as long as the tower can support the... whether it's an extension of the tower or just adding more sectors to give more capability. Add an antenna that's pointed over here where they didn't have something before because there wasn't people living over there before, that kind of stuff. We want to encourage that as much as possible. And height is always an issue because in the county, it's not flat. So you're not going to have 10 miles of flat space, you're going to be going up and down like this. So the tower has to be located. And one of the things that Shavana and we've got some maps we'll show in a little bit is the rings. And when they come and present and do the application, they have to show justification for where they need it. So there's actually what's called search rings or map rings. And they lay them out and they overlap and say, this is our weak area, this is what we're intended on covering.
Well, there's one other question I have. That just reminds me of that. It was in the definitions here, definition of service gap or something.
Oh, gap in service. For the purposes of acceptance of the regulations hearing, gap in service is defined as the maximum coverage required for service providers to retain their FCC license. I didn't understand that definition because it sounds like maybe the gap would be the gap between that and the coverage that they've already got. Wouldn't that, doesn't that, because I didn't understand what, how a gap.
That definition gives you the edit.
Yeah.
To make more sense.
Right. Okay, I'm
going to. Essentially, a gap in service is what you just said. It's what isn't covered right
now. Yeah, because according to this, it's what is covered. And I thought that that sounded like the definition needed to be changed.
It's updated in the new one. Okay. Do you have the 418 one?
Okay, that was my only two questions.
So, yeah, basically what they have to do is they have to come in and justify that they need it. They can't just say, hey, I want to put a tower up in a tree. Which, to some point, with the new federal regulations, they can co-locate anytime they want, as long as there's an existing tower. We prefer co-location, and we also, if you read through this, we prefer camouflage. You know, anyone's been down the Rogue River lately, you're about halfway down on the other side of Finley Bend, you look up on the mountain, and there's one big giant tree sticking up taller than everybody else by about 30 feet. That's a cell tower.
I wondered about that tree.
Even though it sticks up and everybody can see it, it's not really an eyesore because you don't think about it. You think it's just a tall tree.
That's
funny. I saw those in North Dakota. Was the only tree in 100 miles.
My husband and I actually were discussing this. I wonder why that tree.
Our ordinances, we've tried to do this, whether it's painting, soft camouflage. We went back and actually on our last meeting, we had to go back and redo some stuff on buildings, you know, because they put them in church steeples and towers. We've got pictures and samples of them we went through in the, you know, just make it unobtrusive.
Those are stealth installations, right?
Yeah, basically. Right.
And so you don't know you're getting any radiation if you're standing in front of them. I mean, that's the drawback of having a camouflage.
Most of the effects of radiation are psychodynamic anyway. So.
Dave, you were going to...
That's a joke.
Dave's going to kind of run through it real quick.
Okay. The first section is the purpose, as it is with most of our ordinances, and compliance with the PCA, minimizing adverse visual, aesthetic, and safety impacts. It's one of the main purposes, of course. And to encourage the co-location or attachment of wireless antenna, existing wireless cellular and PCS towers and structures. Concentration or dilution, those were some of the issues we were dealing with. The committee came to the conclusion that co-location on existing towers rather than having a proliferation of towers in the county would be to the benefit of all. The applicability, there are exemptions, of course, satellite earth stations, citizen band radio antennas, ham radios, those are exempt.
Can I ask a question? I want to wait until you're all done and just come back on that. I'm just wondering why there's exemptions on these towers that have, you know, 10,000 times as much radiation or power.
It's how they're licensed by the federal government.
We just don't deal with that at all.
Yeah. And we actually changed it from cellular ordinance to cellular TCS to make sure that...
Well, I don't want to interrupt you all like there, but I can't.
I think 4 and 5 are redundant to 1. I don't think you need 4 and 5. Because 1 handles all those things. But, okay, that's just my comment.
Good interrupting.
Yeah.
Okay, for what it's worth, we then have a set of definitions. These words are unique to this ordinance. This is the controlling ordinance on wireless and PCS facilities. So unlike most of the ordinances we have that are going to have a rather broad brush on a number of issues, this one is very specific. So there's a longer list of definitions that are unique to this ordinance than you'll see in other ordinances. Review types, we have both ministerial and quasi-judicial.
The applications for a co-location, minor modification, and temporary wireless communication facilities, such as that that went up during the Biscuit Fire. There were temporary wireless facilities that went up to help firefighters in that fire. Those are ministerial applications. There really aren't any review criteria. They're standards. It's virtually an over-the-counter permit. That's not exactly how we process them, but it's a quick process. Quasi-judicial are those that will have some community impact. New facility. Pre-application, the next section, 99050 on page 4. Pre-application review is required for all proposed cellular and PCS communication facilities except for co-located antenna. Again, we're making it easier to co-locate. There are siting priorities, which again sort of echo that theme. The first thing we want is co-located PCS support structures. After that, we're going to do another one on a site where a PCS structure exists, then a new site in industrial commercial zone, then forest zones, then farm of residential or other non-forest zones. So the proliferation of cell towers in residential areas is something we're trying to avoid. That has to be a balance, of course, because where do people want to use their cell phone? In the residential area. We're hoping that this will encourage those locations to be on the edge of rural areas or residential areas. They're not actually in the residential community that you can still get a phone call from. We have some application requirements and performance standards for co-location and also those for new wireless and PCS facility sites. There's the involvement of technical experts that the county does not have. We're asking for reports from qualified licensed engineers demonstrating the aspects of the facility.
Sometimes you say what kind of engineer, and then other times you just say a qualified licensed engineer without specifying his specialty. Like on page 5.
That was supposed to be all one. Huh. That was supposed to say the same thing.
It depends on whether it's RF or structural, too.
Yes, but some say nothing. So, like item 4 near the top of page 5.
Okay. A registered engineer.
RF.
Engineer. Stan, if I can paraphrase, engineer references should be specific. That's what you're
asking.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. Looking through page, bottom of page 6, visual impact study. For new facilities, we want to see a simulation of potential visual impacts of the proposed facility and describing methods for mitigation of the resulting impacts. This was one of the provisions that we put in there to protect property values.
Just above that on item 6, a quick one.
And so Peggy wouldn't notice that it wasn't a tree when she came down.
Item 6, that was an eye-opener to me. I didn't know that landowners were as liable as the service provider for removing abandoned towers. Why would any landowner want to buy any?
Because they make money, make about $1,000.
Because they pay a lot. Yeah, but even then.
And
the rental value of the tower, if it was yours,
yeah, it was. Yeah.
All right.
And if the company goes out of business, someone's got to be liable to get rid of it. So the landowner.
Anyway, right? Exactly. Somebody's got to put up a bond for that.
Yeah.
Basically, it's a CYA to make sure if it ever gets deceased in usage, that it comes down and not be a hazard.
Right. Yeah. Well, in the city of Cape Junction, we went through this. A company went out of business and left their satellite dishes there. And we finally had to go to court and take the land back to get rid of them. Mm-hmm. So it does happen.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One of the goals of any new ordinance like this as well is when an applicant comes in for a cell tower application and we're hoping to advertise this well enough that people know if they're approached by a wireless communications provider to also get a copy of our ordinance and find out what their obligations are as a private property owner.
Right.
And oftentimes those issues are addressed in the private contracts that they set up with the wireless provider. We have general development standards starting in 99060. And those are development standards that all wireless facilities need to meet. New ones. And we address everything in there from height standards to welfare safety, setback limitations. As Ron said, there was quite a bit of discussion on setbacks, setback from the tower, setback to a residence, to a property line. We looked at a lot of different scenarios and how that might come out. We do have a couple of maps here that I wanted to show you that were produced by County GIS. And this first map indicates what a buffer from 750 feet on this one from residences in the county. And if you put all those buffers together, you end up with a salmon-colored color on this map. Now, this was derived from property information, James, correct me, 2005?
Yes.
So the property information is 5 years old, but has been updated. The map will be updated, and we'll know exactly what areas would involve a 750-foot buffer. This is to give you a visual idea of if that buffer was proposed and cell towers had to be set back from all residences 750 feet, what isn't pink is what they got left over.
What's pink is what's left over or what they
pink is what they can't put.
Pink is what they cannot use. No.
What isn't pink is what's left over.
Right.
But the ordinance is proposed at 1,200 feet.
That's the setback issue that we are going to
address. Another map we had done, because we were looking at several, David. We looked at 250, we looked at 750, we looked at 1,500, we ended up at 1,200.
Yeah, right.
Haven't done a map for 1,200 yet, but that was 750. This is what 1,500 looks like. And again, 2005 building inventory. Spent quite a bit of building since 2005, so obviously these green blobs would be a lot bigger, because they're 1,500 foot setback from residents. We found it easier rather than cite each of the cell towers and then try to figure out what
right.
where residents are stored in there. It was easier because we have a layer in GIS just to take the home site, and centered on each of those home site is a 1,500 foot radius.
And if there's already
so 1,200 is somewhere between those two counts.
And my understanding is that if there's already a cell tower in one of the areas, that it gets grandfathered in and you can still have others co-located with it.
That's right. Yes. And that was part of the reason for the emphasis on co-location around
right.
development of the ordinance.
One of the goals is to try to get the residential areas serviced or served by a cell phone tower without being right in the middle of it. So is there something to prevent them from going farther away and having a stronger signal?
Technology.
Hmm?
They have a maximum distance from the tower they can support.
Because of the power.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't boost it up farther away.
Yeah, right. The towers actually are low power output.
Right. I'm just saying,
they're not flat.
More power.
Right. You can't do it. Regulations restrict.
Okay.
So,
I figured that might
an be. Average that is reasonable would be not more than 6 miles.
Right.
Which so that's just the FCC controls it.
Yeah. They control the power output, yes. Yeah. They don't control where you sight them in the distance. Dave?
Well, so if I read this correctly, the opt-out provision, which is 2A, talks about an ability to prove that they need a cell tower in a place that might be all green.
Am I reading that correctly?
Yes. Okay. That's just what
yes.
I thought I understood that. I just want to make sure I understood that correctly.
Well, that's all. Yeah. They're not because the cost of the towers are. You know, you're talking a mil plus.
I mean, if you look at the map there, you basically couldn't put a tower
right
anywhere. Yeah. I mean, almost anywhere.
At 1,500 feet, it's pretty doggone slim to get a tower where it's going to be a functional tower.
Right. Right.
So that's henceforth why we have setback questions
and the option of proving no service.
Right, and that is part of the requirement of the application.
Right.
They must come in with the maps showing that this is what their intention are, and this is what, and hopefully, can we make sure that at the PC we bring those maps?
We'll have one produced at 1,200 feet.
No, I don't mean a map. I mean an application where it shows what they're bringing in with the application, so the PC can see that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We have existing applications where we can get a copy to you guys where you can actually see what's being turned in now. Because I think that's major for you guys to have an understanding of, oh, okay, this is what they're giving me.
Do I need anything more, or is this enough? I think it's enough what they're currently doing.
Well, looking at this map, I assume those are township lines, which are 6 miles approximately. So if they can go 6 miles, I don't see hardly anywhere they couldn't reach from just 6 miles away.
Well, it depends on the coverage, because they have to maintain a coverage ratio.
When you set up the 6 miles, let's go out basically.
Trees and elevation aren't necessarily depicted here. Trees
correct.
And land contours is worse than what might appear on this left.
Yeah, 6 miles an accurate reference, just for a frame of reference. I know it varies, but
that's really pushing the extreme, because the technology functions such that if there's an increased amount of users, the individual amount of power available to an individual user increases. So if there's not very many users, those minimal amounts can get more. The more the users use it, there's left to go around as a whole, and each gets a little bit less. And with the increase of usage due to population and popularity, 6 miles is really kind of a push anymore.
Okay. I just wanted to frame a reference for that so people didn't think I was misleading.
And I just want to mention, as the other commissioner clearly noticed, there's an exception. If you can't serve an area within the green area, then there are ways to get it closer.
But the overall goal was to maximize the distance from residences to cell towers, but still balance it with the service available.
And we all understand that they're not going to be alone out there forever. So the houses are coming.
We have application requirements that are more general development standards, on 9H. On page 9, height standards. Maximum height shall be 200 feet. We've got some information about insurance and performance bonds.
The height, is that including the antenna? Because the antenna can go above the structure, right?
What we came up with as a point on that, even though these pens are the same size, pretend this one's only 4 or 5 feet long and this one's 150 feet. The antenna, the center line of that antenna can't be any higher than the top of the tower.
Okay.
That's
right. I didn't see that spelled out anymore.
It's part of the regulation.
Maximum height.
Yeah, it's all maximum height for the structure.
Yeah,
I didn't see that either.
That was discussed in length.
Okay.
We also have development standards by zoning.
Quick question, on noise level. That seems reasonable, but should there be an exception for when there's a power emergency, the power's out and the generator is operating?
No, because most of them, the generator is going to be inside a building, not exposed outside.
So it's not going to change the...
Realistically, the noise level is non-existent. Other than when somebody's there working and doing something, the generator will be in a generically a sealed box.
There is some refinements to that statement, though, that were part of the changes we're going to make. Relatively minor, but it'll address the issue.
It's a minor issue.
Yeah, we'll also have to have the fire extinguisher and all the safety hazards and everything else. Margaret?
I have one question about that. That says that the noise the shall not produce increased ambient noise level at the property line nearest the facility. Is it possible, because of the direction or placement or something, that it could produce more noise at a property line, even though it wasn't as close? I mean, should it be as...
If it was outside, I would say yes.
That's exactly the issue that this revision addresses.
Okay.
I'll read it for you real quickly. It's short. Shall not produce an increase in ambient noise level at the nearest property line or nearest uphill property line from the facility. This includes emergency generators as well as air conditioners.
Okay. Well, any property line adjacent to the facility, I think, would work.
Development standards by zoning district, starting on page 11. Exclusive farm and farm resource zones. This language is straight out of state statute and rule.
The entire page?
What was he saying?
070.
Because the A1, this paragraph, I can't understand that sentence. It's inverted syntax or something. A utility facility established under ORS such and such is necessary for public service if the facility must be sited in an exclusive farm use zone in order to provide the service.
Yeah.
Because you have to read ORS 215.25.31C to understand exactly what that sentence means.
We've also made a note of for special districts prohibited in the flood hazard overlay zone, I think probably for obvious reasons.
I thought it said it wasn't prohibited in the floodplain zone, but I misread that.
Wireless communication support structures are prohibited in the flood hazard overlay zone.
I take it back. I read this in my sentence again, and it makes total sense.
At the bottom of page 12, we also have a requirement for independent consultation. This was a provision that we saw in some other wireless ordinances, and something that we've run into in any jurisdiction with a small staff. We don't have any radio frequency engineers on staff yet, and no one's volunteering to work for us. So an independent consultant may be necessary to appropriately interpret the requirements of the TCA and review applications under the pertinent criteria and requirements.
Right.
So this is our opportunity.
This
to
would
hire
bother me at first, but I like the way you've modified it, and done an excellent job. I think I can support that the way you've
done it. Makes more sense.
Okay. Next on page 13, the wireless facility site plan approval criteria. So in addition to general development standards, which are required, fitting the criteria. And here's the, we talked about this before, standards are objective, criteria are subjective, so there is some room for justifying how one meets the site plan approval criteria. You have a subsection on justification of need and location. And again, on the top of page 15, were there visual impacts have been mitigated to the greatest extent possible by using camouflage or screening? And there's a few more, a lot more verbiage there. But again, that's a criteria. How much is it on screen? And that's sort of proving your point.
I got to go back to my still my single biggest bugaboo about this ordinance, and that has to do with the county being involved in considering and comparing alternative locations. I said in the last work session I was at that I just do not think that the county should be involved in searching out alternative sites for cell towers. I think that's the applicant's job. And that's just my opinion. I don't understand why the county would want to take on that task.
I would agree with that.
Would that be the county planning commission choosing between a couple of locations, or the county actually deciding which one further should go?
What specific portion of the ordinance are you?
Unless I'm reading, citing criteria. If the criteria are satisfied, the county shall consider and compare the location, size, design, operating characteristics of a proposed new facility with other available sites to determine which site is least conducive. It doesn't say the applicant shall do it. It says the county shall do it. Now, am I reading that wrong?
I think because they're supposed to come in not with just one potential site. They're supposed to have multiple site options when they submit the application.
Oh.
Yeah, that changes
that somewhere.
Right.
So it should say multiple.
Yeah.
So
that's the understanding that I think.
So where is that in there? I mean,
so the sites that the county is comparing are sites that the applicant has actually submitted.
Right. Correct.
And the county is just saying this one would be least intrusive.
Correct.
Of the ones you've
provided. So it's not the county going out and picking, hey, I want you to put it over here. The applicant has to come in, and they're going to come in with the primary, and there's two alternative sites. They should have three sites.
Maybe give you an example where that would be useful to have that clause in there. And certainly, I don't think county staff want to be in the business of trying to pick these sites. But let's say we've got two potential cell tower sites. Each of them happens to be 650 feet from the nearest residence. One of them has, and I'm going to represent the view from the residence. Mm-hmm. One of them happens to be over there. The next one happens to be right here.
from my view. I think that that's a useful kind of clause to advise an applicant, look, we've got a view shed from existing residences with this particular site. We've got the same kind of setbacks. We don't have that kind of an impact on this
site. But the applicant has proposed the two sites.
Yes.
He didn't propose one site, and then the county would go out and say, oh, hey, we think there's...
That's not the intent.
Okay, good. Could that be clarified maybe in the wording here? Because I agree with David, yeah.
That's what I suggest we clarify there.
Maybe the wording change or something.
Yeah, good.
And maybe referring it back and point me in the direction where it says, and I might have missed it, that the in the applicant's...
Well, that's in the application.
In the application.
We're not covering the application.
Okay, but if it said that here, if it says that the applicant will provide a preferred of two alternative sites and the county will compare between the sites for the applicant or something like that.
Yeah, or it could be under 99050 where we're talking about application requirements. And I'll reread that again.
With other applicable application sites.
You see, but if you read the whole clause in number 3, it says,
getting back to signing criteria.
In determining the preferred site, the county shall consider the following criteria. Whether the proposed site location creates significant adverse impacts to surrounding properties. Again, the view shed question. And there's A, B, C, D, and E.
Yeah.
So we're beginning, the county, while it's, we're either approving a permit or not, we're also being given some pretty specific direction on how
to evaluate. I have no problem with the citing criteria. I mean, I think there should be criteria against which you measure, and that's fine. It was just, I had a problem with the concept of the county ferreting out other sites if they didn't like the first one that the applicant proposed.
Yeah, I think if it just clarified that the sites that the county is going to compare are all sites that were proposed by the applicant,
right.
I think that would be
better. Exactly. That would be
so
no
you could just write that in the last sentence of paragraph.
Folks, if I could ask you, we're trying to take notes, and sometimes two or three of you are talking at the same time, it's going to be harder for it all. Okay, moving on. Permit limitations and expiration. Again, getting to the abandonment issue.
What if they don't do it?
How do we know if it's abandoned?
Because it hasn't been used for a year.
We have a definition for abandonment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We have a definition for abandonment.
We have to drive up there and see if the thing's functioning.
If it hasn't been used for a year, wasn't it?
Oh, would I know if it hasn't been used for a year?
Yeah, so a continuous period of 355 days.
I'm going to send you up the tower.
You don't start blowing, and you know it's abandoned.
The Falcon will send you out.
No, we won't.
Every 355 days to check it.
So what if the applicant doesn't do that within 30 days of the 10-year period? What's the punishment on the rack and order and draw?
I think the process is they get a letter that says, hey, and then they get another letter, and then I think the property owner gets a letter because the property owner has signed on it. So they're going to get the same letter, and they're going to, so you got different parties instigating, and then the county can take action at any time that wants to pass those legal steps. Same as any other.
Yes.
That's what I was looking for, Stan.
That paragraph B there under permit limitations, it introduces a term that doesn't have a definition. Stealth technology is used as if we all know what it means. I don't have a clue what it means. If I went back to the definition, microstealth is there, but it's not stealth. Oh, is it? That's what I got from researching online. It's the small ones that are hidden, like human injuries, like in signs, church steeples, radio towers, chimneys. You can't generally tell if they're even there.
floating all the
stuff.
Yeah, I just didn't know that's why it didn't have a definition.
We'll look into whether that should be defined or dropped.
We thought it was a name.
It was a plane that the Air Force had, really.
That's a mobile tower.
Okay.
The intention was the height. We don't want to see it.
Yeah, right.
Everybody's happier when they're not.
Typical section on non-conforming uses and structures. Those that are non-conforming now can exist. Temporary uses, again, I've pointed out an example. During the Biscuit Fire, we had a temporary communications tower that was erected.
That's all right.
Federal requirements, just a reference to the federal requirements. And again, most of this language comes straight out of the CFR. And a subsequent review of the ordinance. As I stated, communication technologies are subject to rapid change, and so we wanted to have a provision of the ordinance that said every 5 years we're going to take another look at it and see if it's updated and corrected.
I'd like to commend the subcommittee. It was certainly a lot of work and meant a lot different than the first draft that we had to look at. I really appreciate all the hard work you guys, staff and subcommittee, and Shimon and work with the good work. I second it.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. I was at some of those, and the due diligence was absolutely done.
One of the goals that we have as staff, James and I, looking at it and working with the subcommittee and thinking of some of the amount of wordsmithing that goes into one of these things to make sure that you can actually implement it. That was our goal, to make sure that we get an ordinance to be implemented. And that's something that we always struggle with in writing ordinances. And I think we're just about there. So I think what we'd like to do at this time is maybe ask the Planning Commission, do you want us to... Our subcommittee is pretty much adjourned at this point. Do you want us to look at any particular issues? You brought up a few things today. Do you think we're ready to go to hearing?
I've got a few more small issues of clarification. This is a suitable time to go ask them.
We're going to be pushing our time here.
We're pushing our time here. So,
issues that could be addressed at the public hearing, or is it should be before the public hearing?
They're pretty simple. Like some of these definitions weren't in alphabetical order. Maybe just breaking that it should be, I would say.
Just email that over to Dave, and he can send her in, and she can send it out to everybody.
Doesn't sound like real substantive changes. We can make those.
One of the things the committee did to keep us from just getting bogged down into the garbage is we let the wordsmithing with Shivana and the planning director. Because we weren't as worried about a period or a colon or a dot or something. You know, that's great. She's tackling that. And the committee focused on the meat and potatoes to get things where we needed to be.
I had a question. What's the impact on wildlife of these things? I saw that mentioned here.
None.
We know there's no deer around.
It can fall on a deer, right?
What's a dead rabbit?
Anyone that went to LCBC knows there's no deer in this valley.
Okay, let's close this meeting out. And then
we need to move.
Thank you.